Hello, this is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. You can also listen to us online at kptz.org. And if you happen to be online right now, please note that you can also, after this live show is over, you can listen to a couple of podcasts. Just go to the homepage down the left-hand side, click on podcast, and then go to Our Town. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around town? What about the guy at Dogs Afoot, serving up hot dogs, even if it's raining buckets? Then there's the volunteers who keep merchandise moving at the Habitat for Humanity store. Consider the women taking Zumba at the community center in Uptown. Who are they when they trade in their yoga pants? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer and soaring pine trees. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today we're going to be talking with someone everyone's heard of, but unless you're really active in city government, you probably haven't met him in person. Today I'm welcoming the Port Townsend City Manager, Dave Timmons. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start back at the beginning, Dave. Are you a native of Jefferson County?
No, I'm not. No,
where do you come from?
I was born in Howell, Michigan, which is was a small community outside of Detroit, about 45 miles northwest of Detroit.
Uh-huh.
Sort of halfway between Detroit and Lansing.
I see. And did you go to school in Michigan?
Yep. I started college there, went to a community college, then transferred to Michigan State. And then from there, I did some graduate work up in Northern Michigan University in Marquette, Michigan.
So you were pretty close to the auto industry there in Michigan. Were your parents working in that industry?
No. My dad was with Bell Telephone at the time. He was a switch installer, repair person with a phone company. My mother was a drugstore clerk for 42 years in the same drugstore in our hometown.
Wow, sort of like Don's here, right?
Yeah, very much. It was Bob's Pharmacy, or Baldwin's Pharmacy that started, and then became Bob's Pharmacy. But I had two uncles. One was a foreman at Ford Motors, and another was a foreman at General Motors.
Were you one of these people that always knew what you wanted to be when you grew up, or did you waffle around a bit?
No, I waffled around, particularly in high school. I worked full-time while I was through high school. Actually, I started in junior high school. Did a variety of different jobs in restaurants and then also in stores. I sold motorcycles when I was 16, worked in a bike shop. Thought I would go into military, but then the military wouldn't take me.
What? That was sort of the Vietnam era. I thought they took everyone.
Yeah, well, I did too, but I went down to the recruiting station, and the guy took one look at my glasses that I wore at the time and told me to get out.
Well, then plan one, did you have a plan B?
No, I actually came up with plan B sort of just one day. I went into my high school counselor's office, and I said, find me a college that nobody from here is going to.
Yeah, I see you were really tight with folks in high school. So you found this college, and did you go straight into a major that you loved, or did you flip-flop?
No, I went into parks management, because I grew up in the outdoors, always liked the outdoors. My grandmother that lived with us, I would call her one of the original Annie Oakleys. She taught me how to shoot a gun, go fishing, field dress a rabbit.
All really good skills to have,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah, very much an outdoors person.
So you thought you'd be a park ranger. Did you actually try that for a while?
Well, I worked in Isle Royale National Park for two summers while I was in college. Not as a ranger or anything, but as a marina attendant.
Gee, that sounds like fun, working on a marina. What did you actually do?
Well, we ran the store which sold the gas, reserved the slots for the boats that came in and out.
Well, this must have been a lot of fun for a teenage guy.
Yeah, well, it was very interesting. It was a wilderness island, a national park, very remote, not a lot of boats. I mean, it was just because you had to have a very sturdy boat to get out to Isle Royal. But we would handle the supplies as it came in off ship, put everything back on, and actually service the, you know, worked with the people that had to go back and forth.
But at some point, obviously, you changed courses a bit and did not go on to become a full-time park ranger. How did that happen?
I was in line to be hired to be a park ranger, but the problem was at that time, the Vietnam vets, they had a right of first refusal. They not only got extra preference points on their civil service, but they had a right of first refusal if they made the list. And so it was obvious that I would never make it because there were just too many vets who really needed the job more than I did. So went back and did another year at Michigan State and then decided, okay, I was scheduled to come back and work in the marina that summer and just decided, actually the night before I was supposed to leave, I called him up and told him I wasn't coming.
Wow. What were you going to do then? Because probably you needed money.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Actually, our friend I grew up with, his parents needed their house painted. It was a big Victorian, and so I agreed to paint it and started that for the summer, and then decided one day that I just wasn't going to do it. And my brother had just recently moved to Marquette, Michigan, to run the fish hatchery up there for the state. I called him up and said, can I come stay with you for a while and see what we can, if I can find something up there? And he said, sure. So I packed everything up and drove the 9 hours it takes to get up there and got up there and then found a job working on a river project, a restoration project.
But how'd you get into government?
Well, it was literally by an accident. While I was working on the river project, we were floating logs down the river, and I was working with a picaroon, which is a spiked-handled object that is used to snag logs. And I'd been in the water too long and was getting kind of hypothermic. I slung the hook at one of the logs, and it glanced off, and I heard a thunk, and the thunk was my leg.
Oh, no.
So while I was convalescing, some friends of mine brought me an ad for a job they said I would probably be safer in, which was a zoning administrator for Delta County, Michigan, which was to the south of Marquette on Lake Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And it was a new position, a new ordinance. It had a land use characteristic, so I thought, well, maybe that's something to be interested in. And I applied, and they hired me. And that's how I got started in government.
And how long did you stay with that?
That was about 9 months. I started everything from scratch. There wasn't any forms. There wasn't any office. I remember I had to actually clean out a closet and go down to the warehouse and find a desk. Had to do everything myself. We didn't have computers at that time, so we had to design forms and get everything all set up. And it started to make the process work, but then I worked next to the building inspectors, and then I saw a lot of duplication. And so I recommended to the county commission after a while that my department get merged with the building department and that they create a new position, which they did.
And so you created yourself into the position?
Well, they wanted me, but I had met my wife at that time and decided that actually I needed more money.
Yes.
And so in Dickinson County, which is in Iron Mountain, Kingsford, Michigan, there was a village of Quinnesec, which was a township, had been selected to be a new paper mill site. And the state of Michigan wanted them to hire a manager to help prepare the community for competing to get this paper mill secured to locate in that part of the state. And so I had applied for the job, and they hired me.
So that was your first job as a city manager?
Yeah.
Cool. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. This show's called Our Town. I'm Marianne McNellis. Right now, I'm interviewing Port Townsend City Manager Dave Timmons. He is just telling me about his first job as a city manager, but now I think we're going to hear how he ended up in Port Townsend. So tell me that story.
Well, it started out in Michigan, and then eventually I went on to Vermont. I worked in managed the town of Colchester, which was adjacent to the city of Burlington.
What prompted you to leave Michigan?
Weather.
How much weather were we talking about?
Extreme weather. In the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is very extreme.
So you moved to balmy Vermont?
Yes. And actually, by comparison, it is.
Really?
It was.
And so was Bernie Sanders around then?
Bernie was mayor of Burlington then.
Aha. So did you get to know him?
Yep. I worked with him, and then mostly, though, with his protege, Peter Clavel, who took over after Bernie left as mayor.
Cool.
But and I can say that what you see in Bernie is what you're going to get. There is no other Bernie. He's a very, very intense man and very much committed to his values and beliefs.
Yeah, he does seem like a passionate man.
Yeah. Howard Dean was the same way. I knew Howard Dean well, too. Mm. I was actually nominated to be on Howard's cabinet while I was there, but twice, actually.
Huh.
But Howard and I didn't see eye to eye on a number of issues. So.
Then it's probably not good to be on his cabinet.
It would not be, no.
And so how did you get from Vermont to Port Townsend, and when?
Well, it was in 97. I decided I didn't want to renew my contract with the town. I needed to take a break. It had been a very, very difficult period. The town was very divided on a lot of issues, a lot of growth. I started doing some work with FEMA on disaster recovery. And in the meantime, I started looking, okay, where do I want to be when I grow up? And my wife and I talked about it. She had a career at the University of Vermont. We had both daughters in college at the time, and so we were thinking, well, after they graduate and we're empty nesters, is this where we want to be? And as we progressively aged, we also found that weather became more extreme. And I don't think it had to do with climate change as much as our physiological change that was occurring. So we started looking at different locations of the ground of country of where would we want to be. And my wife had been out to the Northwest related to her job. And so we started looking in this area in the Northwest, started to try to find where it would be a good fit. And part of that process, I begin to realize, is that politics and community issues are going to be what they are no matter where you are, in what state or what venue. They're all the same. Port Townsend is not unique in that respect.
There are characters everywhere.
They are, and issues are volatile and passionate. So it really depends upon where you want to be. And so we started looking at, let's find a place where we would be happy living and just deal with the stress of the job. Port Townsend kind of fit that mold.
And when you first arrived as city manager, that was in 99, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a peaceful situation politically, or was there a bit of tension around?
A lot of tension. Very, very divided, very hostile. But underlying all of that was a sense of community and a sense of need and a sense of opportunity. So I took the risk and jumped in to see if that was what I was really seeing.
Well, have the issues changed in the time you've been here?
There's been a change, a lot of changes.
Like what? Be more specific.
Well, a demographic shift in population. The community is still a lot of passion, but I think back then people felt threatened. I don't think people feel as threatened as they did back then.
Threatened by what?
By the city itself, by actions of the city council or by the directions the city might go in.
Huh.
I don't see that now as, I think nobody wants to cause harm or do harm to the city. I think everybody's, heart's in the right place. We have different points of view on how to get to, where we need to go. But I don't see it as, absolutism as that we used to have.
Okay.
It's so either you are for me or against me, kind of.
So now is there more a spirit of compromise and cooperation?
It did seem that way. But, there are people who are still pretty entrenched in their points of view and values, and you generally don't hear about them until you're threatening them with something.
Wow.
Or some externality is causing a threat.
Well, today in 2016, what do you think are, from your vantage point as city manager, what are the big issues in Port Townsend?
I think there's an inequity in the community, income inequity. I think there's a real gap between the haves and the have-nots, and the challenge that brings in terms of housing opportunities and other things. I think that's something that's going to challenge us for the next decade.
I've heard that rental property in particular is extremely difficult to come by right now.
It is. Housing, affordable housing, what I call workforce housing. just normal, you know, for people who have average incomes can be, you know, are having difficulty.
I would think so.
Particularly in a rental housing market. That is, it's very, very short in supply right now.
Is the city doing anything about this or talking
about
doing something?
Well, we're talking about it. There's certain things that we can do and there's certain things that we can't because it's up to the private sector to, you know, step in. But what we can do is try to help support that. And one idea is that I'm exploring is creating partnerships of where if you develop rental housing, one day it's there and the next day it's gone because it responds to the market. That's what we did in Burlington area. We created a nonprofit housing corporation. And I think that's the challenge that we're facing here is that we got to create an entity that would be like a housing trust that would hold the property in perpetuity so that it's always there.
So you, in Burlington, went ahead with the idea of a housing trust. And did it work?
Oh, very successful, even to this day.
Can you give some magnitude of what it did?
Well, I was on the board of directors. What it did is it bought and retained housing or developed housing in partnership with others. It created a whole platform of partnering with organizations like Habitat or the housing authorities or, you know, a variety of different things. And then it slowly developed a cluster of housing properties that it managed in a portfolio.
And so it managed them and rented them out? It had the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had, I believe when I was there, about 1,800. I think they've added another 1,000 since I left.
Wow, that is quite ambitious.
Yeah. Hey, it can be done.
Interesting. You know. So is the city council discussing this at this point in time?
Yeah, and they've kind of given me that as a task priority issue for me to start working on. And so I'm trying to begin to figure out who all the players are, how we can create this, and possibly look at what would be the logical next step.
Yeah.
What, you know, and I think that it's because it crosses political jurisdiction, it's not just the city politically,
right.
It's the county as well, that it has to have an organizational structure that reaches beyond the political boundaries.
And is there any timetable at this point as to when?
Within the next 3 years. I think we want to try to do something sooner if we can, but it takes time.
Okay. One issue in town is the mill. People, newcomers, sometimes you hear them, well, you can read their letters in the Leader saying, gee, I don't like the mill. But the mill has over 300 good-paying jobs. There have been many towns around the Pacific Northwest, well, actually all over, where a mill or a big employer shuts down. Has the city considered that as a possibility, and is there any contingency plan? Do you have any experience with something like that?
Yeah, I did, actually. When I was in Marquette, we went from zero unemployment to 30% almost overnight.
Wow, what happened?
It was basically the shutdown of the steel industry and the mines. They shut down, and then in Vermont, major employers in the state of Vermont at this time was IBM. A lot of people didn't realize that IBM had quite a complex there. And they accounted for 28% of all the income of the state.
Wow, that's a chunk.
In the 90s, during that recession, when IBM did their first ever layoffs, it sent some shockwaves around the state to look at diversifying. And I think the same as here is there is a need to diversify to one decision. And I think we saw that with when we lost the state ferries at that time. It was sort of like that's what it's like.
Yeah, that was scary.
And it galvanized the community into some solutions and actions. And I think that we've got an opportunity to begin to grow and expand. And that's what we're trying to do in the Howard Street Project is try to look at how we can diversify the economy and the economic base so it's not just dependent upon a single employer.
Right. And yet there are forces in this town that are against growth or expansion and against companies coming in. I've, you know, heard the stories about, I guess it was Rite Aid tried to come to town a few years back, And there's something on the books that prevents large stores or chains, right? What's it?
And there's two things. There's size limitations of 40,000 square feet for retail is the maximum, but that's a big building. It's almost the size of Safeway.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
And then the other is what they call the formula store, which was put in place, which defines what a formula store will be like, and you can deformulize, and that's what some of the stores have done that have located here recently. They've deformulized.
You know, that's sort of a term that's beyond me. Explain it a little bit.
Well, Starbucks is a classic formula store.
Yes.
Okay. Same uniforms, same menu, same look, in architecture, same logo. And so that's what defines a formula store. You're allowed up to two. And so you can basically deformulize your product or your menu or your look to become unique and fit within the code. So it's really just trying to break apart, you know, that common identity look and feel.
So there's a McDonald's in Port Townsend. Mm-hmm. I don't honestly know how long ago that came in. Was it before the formula?
Oh, yeah, many years before that.
Okay, so they got in. Yeah. But if another Burger King, Wendy's, whatever, wanted to come in, I guess that would be difficult.
Couldn't do it unless they deformulized, which would be kind of difficult or impossible.
Yeah. Is Port Townsend, from your viewpoint as city manager, open to new businesses locating here?
Yes and no. It depends on who, you know, a formula store. No, it's not very friendly towards that. But to other businesses, you know, we work really hard, but what we find is that, you know, I met with one business that wants to expand here, who's actively working with them, and he was told emphatically that he couldn't locate in Port Townsend.
Wow.
I don't know why he was told that, but it was just not true.
And did you manage to convince him?
Yeah, we're working with them right now on a new facility. And okay. He's a light manufacturer, and it's independently owned, so it's one of those things. The problem is that a lot of people, what we find, if you look at the businesses that are here, that are in the kind of that light manufacturing or that kind of, they're here, they all have one thing in common. They all want to be here, despite the, you know, that they could get lower rents elsewhere or better labor elsewhere. They all choose to be here because they're making their own decision. And that's what we have to look at. And that's the future here, is to find more of them.
So more entrepreneurs, more small businesses?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And are we having much luck with that so far?
Well, there are not a lot of them out there, so it's hard to, because they can be and choose to be wherever they want. And so what you have to be careful of, though, is you can't saddle them, you know, with $1 million worth of infrastructure to develop the property, because they can't afford that. So, in effect, the studies that and recommendations that we've been given say you got to have properties that are ready to go, that have all the infrastructure in place. And that's why we've been working really hard to try to get that infrastructure in place so that that doesn't become then a burden on the property.
Okay. And one example you used earlier was the Howard Street expansion. Mm-hmm. Going through there, anything else specific that the city is doing or about to do?
Well, we have limited geography, but you know, you look at the lands that have been, it's not for the lack of land and the lack of zoning. It's the fact that it's the lack of infrastructure that makes the property affordable to a startup business. That's one of the challenges that we're facing. We did an economic analysis, and it found that the commercial retail demand in this area, not just the city, but in this area in East Jefferson County, is about 1/4 acre a year. Well, that's not a lot.
No, that isn't.
So it's not just unique to the city. It's all of East Jefferson County. There's a challenge.
One thing I've always wondered, are there different rules for the businesses in the historic district than, you know, up the hill?
Yeah, there are. They're from the standpoint of design review, primarily. When you get to the downtown, you're really not looking at manufacturing, or you're not looking at, you're looking more at retail or office type uses.
Well, we're running pretty short on time here, but what do you think are the core challenges facing us today?
Well, I think it's that income inequality, inequity that's here. I think that you look at the demographics split in the community between sort of the age demographic that we are, I think that's the challenge, is how do we, what we have to do is actually bring back the working age labor force. And to do that means we've got to have the housing. So it's a chicken and egg.
Yeah, you've got to have the housing for the working age population. We also have to have the jobs for them.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's a lovely place to retire to, but on the other hand, people want certain services too.
Right. Well, what we saw in some studies that we've been analyzing is 1,500 jobs were lost during the recession, which were mostly at the service industry level.
Right.
At the same point, you look at another study and it shows that our population age demographic, we got older. But then you look at the population studies, we didn't grow in population. So what that means is that the younger group that were working in those service industry jobs left the area and were replaced by the retirees that moved in who took over the housing. So if you want to bring back those younger working class, you know, individuals, the housing's been taken up.
Yeah, so there is no housing for them.
So that's a challenge that we're facing. I've got employees that we're looking to interview and bring into town, but our concern is that they may not find housing.
Right. Well, some places use housing subsidies to attract workers, but that requires a certain amount of capital.
And this isn't actually the housing subsidy. It's the fact that there's not inventory.
It doesn't exist.
So it's a chicken and egg, so it's got to work in tandem. They got to be, you know, we've got to have a multi-frontal assault on the issue to change it.
So. Well, Dave, I hate to tell you this, but we're basically out of time, and I'd really like for us to continue this conversation maybe in 6 months or so.
Sure.
This is Marianne McNellis, the host of Our Town. I've been talking today with the city general manager, Dave Timmons, who's been talking about the challenges of Port Townsend. Thank you for listening. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. Stay tuned for more dynamic, eclectic community programming.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by Sonny Flores.